I'm Jessica Holcomb, and I'm a business attorney from North Auburn in the southern part of California's District 1.
Well, first of all, thank you, Jessica, for coming to North State Public Radio today.
Thank you for having me.
So obviously you're seeking office because you feel the North State can be better represented. Can you explain three key policy areas where you think you'd be more in step with local voters than incumbent Doug LaMalfa?
Absolutely. So I was at the Oroville Town Hall meeting when so many voters appeared. There were over 400 voters in that auditorium, and one of their primary concerns was health care. And Doug LaMalfa threw up his hands as he was explaining why he supported repealing the ACA, and he told the audience, "You all can do this without me," and he temporarily walked off the stage. That is not leadership. We need a representative who's going to fight for universal health care for all Americans. We're the only developed nation that doesn't provide at least some threshold of health care that all of its citizens have access to. While I was growing up, I was the oldest of seven kids, and our family was poor. And there were many years when we didn't have health insurance, and at times when we were homeless. And that's why there's a fire in me to ensure that all Americans have access to affordable medical care.
And would you like to add any... And this is optional, but would you like to add two other key policy areas where you think that you'd be more in step with local voters than Doug LaMalfa?
Absolutely. Many of our voters here feel that their children will not have access to the opportunities that past generations did. And I'm an advocate for ensuring that all Americans have access to affordable preschool, as well as access to vocational training, investing more in our junior colleges, and providing additional funding for vocational training programs at the high school level, as well as making university-level education tuition-free. And we know we can do it. The criticism of that is that it's simply going to be too expensive. But if we allocate our federal resources and prioritize our students, we certainly have the resources to do it now.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the second question. Illegal immigration and cannabis are two issues that seem to have joined abortion and firearms as wedge issues in a supposed culture war across the nation. Where do you stand on each of these issues, both illegal immigration and cannabis, and how much latitude should states have to set their own rules?
So we absolutely need to pass a Clean Dream Act. And by clean, I mean legislation that allows our dreamers to have access to permanent residency and ultimately a path to citizenship without trying to tack on other pieces of legislation in order to pass it. What's happened to a lot of our undocumented immigrants, especially those who came over as children, they've become pawns in a political game, a bipartisan game. And that's not only unfair, it's un-American. We've always been a land of immigrants. And in fact, we not only cherish our cultural diversity, but our economy depends on immigration. And so I'm also in favor of the Blue Card program, which would provide a path to citizenship for many of our rural workers.
And the second half of this question is about cannabis as a kind of a divisive issue for a lot of people across the nation. And where do you stand on that? And how much latitude should states have to set their own rules on both these issues?
I think the simplest and the most effective way to address the issue of cannabis is simply to legalize it at the federal level. Because what's happened is a lot of our cannabis businesses, whether they're located in California or in states which have legalized cannabis, is that these businesses are not able to operate fully legitimately and without the threat of crime. If you don't have access to a bank account, if you don't have access to be able to obtain an SBA loan, this hinders your operations. And it's also hindered local authorities, as well as federal authorities, from regulating what sort of pesticides are used on cannabis crops, what sort of environmental regulations should be in place. And we've also found ourselves in a situation where so many criminals are being, well, individuals who use marijuana, have smoked marijuana, are being held as criminals in our prison. And now they have a criminal record, which holds them back from other opportunities in life. And so I'm all in favor of the Marijuana Justice Act, which would remove cannabis and marijuana from Schedule 1 and also provide the opportunity for those businesses already operating in the United States to operate fully in the light and to succeed.
And as far as states' rights to make their own rules, how much latitude should states have to set their own rules on these issues, do you think?
So under federal law and under the Constitution, the federal government has the right to regulate commerce under the Commerce Clause. So federal regulations of if we were to legalize cannabis at the federal level, that would effectively trump what local jurisdictions can do to restrict it. The problem that we've seen is that even though cannabis, for example, is legal at the state level, many local authorities have tried to limit the ability of cannabis growers to operate. And that just further sends these businesses back into the black market and it spurs crime. And so by making it legal at the federal level, that would inhibit local authorities that are trying to hinder the path to legalization for these businesses.
Excellent. Let's move on to the next question. The North State differs from the rest of California in many ways. What would you say is the most critical challenge that the North State faces, and how would you help address this challenge?
The biggest problem that's faced by the North State is our sitting congressman, Doug LaMalfa. He has shown very little interest in the needs of his voters. He doesn't care about their health care. He doesn't care about funding for public education. As I've been driving up and down the district since we launched our campaign last May, I've seen broken promises everywhere. We've made a promise to the American people and to our young people that if you do everything right, if you go to school and you work hard, you can have access to the American dream. And yet so many families find themselves stretched financially. They're not able to save. They're not able to buy a home. Even working families find themselves homeless and they have to couch surf with friends or family just to be able to get by. And this is a result of bad federal policies. LaMalfa has proven himself to be a puppet of his largest donors, and he is not serving us. And it's high time that we have someone in Congress who understands the struggles of those who are in our district and is prepared to fight for policies to bring us the opportunity that this country has always promised us if we stay on the right path.
And our region here in the North State is the source of much of the state's water supply. Do you think there's anything wrong with the current system? And what is your stance on current water infrastructure proposals, such as raising the height of Shasta Dam, building Sites Reservoir, and the Delta Bypass Tunnels?
I'm opposed to raising the Shasta Dam and the Sites Reservoir because we're trying to impose 19th century solutions to our long-term water security in the 21st century. The better solutions is to increase our reliance on underground aquifers, which we have hundreds of in California that are being underutilized. And that's not only cost-effective, but it's better for the environment. And we also don't need to worry about the risk of evaporation to the same degree that you do if you have a dam or a reservoir. In addition, throughout the United States, we have thousands of dams that are considered in crisis. We saw that within our own district with the Oroville spillway when there was a lack of investment on maintaining the infrastructure. We have to fix those reservoirs so that they can operate at capacity, which many of them are not because they're in crisis mode, as well as increase our reliance on underground water storage and increase our reliance on recycled water, which Southern California has done successfully for many years now.
The next question we want to talk about is homelessness in California. It's become an entrenched problem for most communities, but the remedies are elusive. What effective measures might be taken at the federal level to end homelessness?
Yeah, my own family was homeless from time to time while I was growing up, and it creates an enormous sense of insecurity, instability, and it's very difficult to work, to be able to go to school, to be able to find an opportunity to take a shower when you're homeless. So when you fall that hard, it's very difficult without the help of friends and family to get back up. But we can implement policies to prevent homelessness the way that we're seeing it here in Chico and throughout the district. I'm in favor of additional funding for HUD Section 202, which would expand housing and improve housing for many of our seniors so that they are not at risk of losing affordable housing or housing that's accessible to them in old age. And I'm also in favor of doing more than just private and public partnerships for affordable rent, such as Section 8 housing, but actually making housing that you can purchase available for working families. The way our laws are set up is that they favor real estate investors over those who are going to be purchasing homes as residences. So we have to treat housing as a utility, the same way that we treat access to electricity and water, to ensure that everyone has access to the opportunity to be able to buy a home. So one of the pieces of legislation that I would sponsor is not only having a VA loan available to veterans, but having those same types of loans, low interest loans, low down payments, available for teachers, for civil servants, for firefighters in our district. In addition, we've got to provide long-term tax incentives and grants for developers to develop smaller homes and expedite the permitting process so that we can make sure we have those homes available in the market for working families to be able to purchase. Because in many cases, that's your long-term asset as you reach your retirement years.
Thank you. And the final question is about budgeting and spending. Congress is entrusted with the power of the purse and spending public money. What policy areas and programs do you think deserve more money, and what would be the source of that money?
We absolutely need to invest further in our public education. There have been studies done that show the United States is behind Vietnam in math and science. We're also well behind the other developed nations. How can our students be prepared for opportunities in the future for an increasingly automated workforce if we're not providing them with the educational opportunities that they need? And we absolutely need to make renewable energy more affordable and accessible. So for example, many families decide not to have solar power because they can't invest, they can't afford the initial upfront cost. And there's many things that we can do at the legislative level to be able to make that more readily affordable. We also need to ensure that we're investing sufficiently in our rural infrastructure. There are many parts of our district that don't have access to high-speed and reliable broadband access, and that inhibits work opportunities for those living in those areas. It also results in a brain drain, so effectively anyone who's young and able to work and who could work remotely is going to move away from those areas because there simply isn't the opportunity to even get access to go online. So these are some very key policies that impact not only our district, but the entire nation. The way we can fund these is by reprioritizing our budget. For example, we spend more than the next seven nations combined on our military. That doesn't make us safer. This administration has cut funding for the State Department. It has also cut funding for key programs that provide us with the opportunity to work well with our trusted allies, for example, on climate change. And if you don't come back climate change, then you create situations where there's desperation throughout the world and crises, and that is the breeding ground for terrorism, for radicalism. So we're not effectively addressing our national security issues, and we're overspending to the benefit of key special interest groups that effectively are paying for the re-election campaigns of those establishment politicians to whom they donate.
Well, Jessica Holcomb, thank you so much for coming to North State Public Radio Day and sharing with us all your thoughts on these issues.
Thank you so much for having me.